Miss something?
This is a black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
Krejci trying to bug him, and Jones will carry it ahead. Jones 2-on-1 over the line into the far circle. Centers Dubois, he scores. Jones sets it up to Pierre-Luc Dubois, who hammered it into an empty net because Rask had to play shot, and the Blue Jackets beat the Bruins in overtime 2-1.
All right, welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. Next couple of hours, we'll talk a lot about the Bruins and what's going on around the NHL as we get set for, as Tim McCone just said, a matinee performance over at the Garden today, 1 o'clock faceoff as the Bruins take on the Edmonton Oilers. Lots to talk about around this team, as always, coming off a shootout loss to the Devils on Tuesday afternoon, and then an overtime loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets on Thursday. Ryan Johnston here in the Town Fair Tire Studios, joining us from over in the booth at TD Garden this morning. We've got Judd Surratt and Bob Beers. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning, Ryan.
Kind of an up and down week. Points in all three games since we last got together, with the win in against Buffalo on Sunday included. Overall, how'd you think the team played this week?
Okay. I mean, they had pockets where they were pretty good, and they had pockets where they were poor. I mean, it's, you know, the New Jersey game was one that was brought up. We'll talk about some of the puck management and some of the odd man rushes that they gave up in that game. I do think that, you know, some of it's when you catch teams. You know, you look at New Jersey's numbers here over the last 10 games, give or take. They've been very good. And they just beat the Islanders the other day, right after they beat the Bruins. Columbus, 8-0-4 now in their last 12 games. Longest streak this season. I mean, longest current streak this season. So I think sometimes it's when you catch teams. I thought Columbus played a really good game against the Bruins. You know, now, did the Bruins elevate enough to overcome it? Obviously, they didn't. They lose in overtime. So, you know, you've got to find ways to overcome some of this if you're an elite team, but you're in the middle of a season right now. You're trying to find ways to win. You don't lose in regulation, so there's a glass half full and a glass half empty on that, right? You're getting points, but you're not getting the two that you want to see night in and night out. So, you know, there's a couple different ways to look at it right now. I look around the league at, you know, sometimes you point fingers at just the Bruins because we focus on them and say, you know, they're losing to bad teams. Well, Columbus has beaten Washington 2 out of 3 this year. You know, Ottawa beats Tampa earlier this year. It's just like it happens. It does happen at times. But at the same time, there's some leads that have been gone away. And I think more to the point, that's where the Bruins right now want to get back to playing some of that lock, you know, some of that tight hockey when they do have leads, and really, you know, figure out ways to close games out. And that's something that's crept into their game here over the last few weeks.
And here in the last couple of games, to add on to what Bob had mentioned, in New Jersey, Patrice Bergeron and the team felt like they sat back. And because of that, the Devils were able to take it to them. I believe they outshot them 19-5 in that third period. Now, they didn't exactly sit back against the Columbus Blue Jackets, but it was the Jackets that were able to win a couple of board battles down low, throw a puck out in front. It glances off a Bruin skate as Matt Grzelcyk is knotted up in front of the net with Nathan Gerby, goes in, and the Jackets made it hard. They took away time and space throughout the game. They played a dedicated defensive game, and they made it hard for the Bruins to rally with any more offense later in that third period.
Yeah, it was the kind of game you expect out of a John Tortorella team, right? It was going to be, they're going to make you work for everything, and that's exactly what happened during the course of that game.
And they're circling the wagons with all their injuries that they have. It's really an amazing run that they're on with all the injuries. They just added another guy,
Kukin.
He got hurt in the game against the Bruins, one of their defensemen. So, I mean, they've got, 10 guys that are out of their lineup, 10 regulars? You know, give or take, there's a couple guys in there that probably wouldn't be in the lineup, but they've had to call a bunch of guys up. They missed their top goaltender, and Elvis played well the other day against the Bruins. So, I mean, you read some of John Tortorella's comments afterwards. He said, we gave them 12 scoring chances throughout the game. You know, we really smothered them. We didn't give them a lot. And, you know, some of the top line had a couple of chances. But, you know, that goes a little bit further to, I'm sure, what we'll talk about this morning and some of the scoring up and down the lineup that needs to be a little bit better right now. And it's just, it's not coming as consistently as the Bruins needed to. So, you know, if you're struggling to score and you're struggling to find ways to, you know, to extend leads, then, okay, you got to lock it down defensively.
And the offense for the Bruins, just to add to that again, is at last check, I think the Bruins have now dropped to 10th in the National Hockey League in goals for per game. So it's the offense that they're getting from the back end, the offense that they're getting from lines 2, 3, and 4. I thought it was telling that Bruce Cassidy had said, listen, we're passing up on some shot opportunities, and maybe we need not only a more simple game, but being able to get to the interior once you get those shots through to get some second chances. We haven't seen a lot of that.
I want to go back to something that Bob mentioned in his opening, you know, talking about how the Bruins, they look, and we've talked about this all year long, the Bruins keep compiling points. I mean, they're, you know, they've lost 18 games this year, and 11 of them have been in overtime or the shootout. And so there's, you know, there's that's a big part of the reason.
Is that good or bad?
it's good and bad. Right? I mean, it's a big exactly. part of the reason that they have a 9 or an 8 point lead over Toronto in the division right now, is because when they lose, more often than not, they're getting points. But it almost makes me feel like we could be overrating this team a little bit. I mean, they're, you know, they're kind of hanging on the edge there, even with this lead in the division, because they're losing. They've lost a lot more games than they've won, it feels like, over the last month or two. And yet they just have such a huge cushion. You know, there's been talk about, you know, Bruce Cassidy trying to push these guys and trying to make sure that they're not too comfortable. I just don't know how good they really are, I guess, is my point.
And in the previous month, they won way more games than they lost. They went on that long streak, and we're all sitting here saying how great they are. But those were all those come from behind wins. Those are all those games where, you know, you're probably getting away with things, and they knew that they had to get back to playing better hockey. And that was that road trip. We went to Ottawa, lost there. We went to Washington, played a good game against the Capitals and lost there. Played a good game against Tampa, lost. Those were all regulation losses. And then it started going back the other way, starting with the Florida game, I believe. So that was the end of the road trip. You sweep Buffalo, you know, two games. Your question is, how good is this team? And that's still a huge, huge question. You know, as constituted right now, you know, there's a lot of holes, and it's up to guys that are within the lineup to step up, and they've had off seasons, I think, and yet they're still where they are, probably, you know, mostly because of the top line, the power play, the penalty kill that's been excellent, the goaltending. So there's certain elements that have been very good throughout the season, but there's other elements that are lagging, and I don't think that's different than any other season, right? I mean, you know, last year at this time, the Bruins are battling with Toronto for second place. Mm-hmm. Tampa Bay is running away with it. So this year you're in first place by, what, 8 points, and you're halfway through the season, just past the halfway point. But there's still holes. There were holes last year. There's holes this year. And that's part of it. That's part of the process. That's part of a long season. And it's up to either guys from within to step up, or it's up to, you know, management to bring somebody in that can do the job.
So let's put some numbers on some of the things that obviously, Ryan, that you're feeling. So the Bruins went 18-3-5 through the first 2 months of the season, October and November. Since the start of December, they are 6-4-6. The general manager, Don Sweeney, was kind enough to sit down with us during the first intermission in the last game. And one of the things that he talked about is, our record is good, but we understand we have a lot of work to do.
And, you know, look, I mean, 6-4-6, again, it's, you know, you come out of that, like, it's actually a winning, you know, considered a winning record in the NHL, right?
Well, you know, Ryan, I haven't minded some of the overtimes that they've played.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't like, obviously, the other day, there was a couple of mistakes that were made on the goal by Dubois, and Seth Jones made a world-class play. But some of the overtimes that they've played haven't been bad. They've been pretty good. They've had chances. You know, they haven't finished it. They haven't gotten some of that puck luck in some of the overtimes. Can they clean things up? Yes, they can. But, you know, it's the shootouts that have really plagued them. When you look at the numbers, 0-0, right? 0-0,
yeah.
What is it?
0-6?
Yeah, 0-6. So, you know, it's a crapshoot when you get there. It's a skills contest. I get all that. But you got to win some of them. You got to find a way to win a couple of them.
I think at some point the numbers are going to change around, but I'm just thinking about the New Jersey game. So the Bruins go into overtime, and obviously that game was decided beyond that. But you go in and you have no Krug and no McAvoy. How many defensemen did they actually play during that 5-minute session?
Two. That was it. It was just two. It was. Yeah. So you know, it was Moore and Grizzly.
That's it.
It was it. Grizzly hit the post and or crossbar, whatever it was, in overtime. So they were look. I haven't minded some of the overtimes. Like I said, the other day I didn't like the game against Columbus, or the overtime against Columbus. Even though they had a decent chance, it was what happened after the chance. And, you know, that was kind of outlined after the game by Bruce Cassidy. But you're taking your chances when you get there. You got to close games out when you're ahead going into the third period and close them out in regulation. And I think that's the more – if you ask what the more pressing point is, the shootouts or we got to close games out, my guess it would be closing games out.
Well, yeah, because when you get to the postseason, obviously you don't have to worry about the shootout anymore, but you do have to worry about protecting leads, and right. You know that's going to be a big thing as you get down the stretch and into the playoffs.
And overtime's a lot different as well.
Yeah,
it's 5-on-5 as opposed to 3-on-3. Sure. So you know it's a completely different game once the playoffs start. But the thing of it is, right now, if you're trying to identify areas that need to improve for the Bruins, the shootout and the extra session is definitely up there, but having leads and finishing out games, for me, anyhow, is more important at this point. I think the overtime and the shootout will come.
Judd Surratt and Bob Beers are over at TD Garden getting ready for the Bruins' 1 o'clock faceoff against Edmonton today. We have a lot more to get to here over the next couple of hours, including your calls at 617-779-0985. We'll talk about Bruce Cassidy, named the head coach of the Atlantic Division All-Stars this week, and some of the moves that he made to try and wake these guys up, Jake DeBrusk, Danton Heinen, among those who found a little bit of extra time either on the bench or up on the ninth floor this week. So we'll get to that coming up. It's the Hockey Show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is where Boston talks hockey.
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 The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Let's go. 98.5 The Sports Hub, Ryan Johnston. Here in the Town Fair Tire Studios, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers over at TD Garden this morning as we join you for the Sports Hub Hockey Show, taking you up until 11 o'clock. Guys, as I mentioned before the break, some decisions by Bruce Cassidy, who's, you know, over the course of his time here, we know that he's not afraid of switching up lines in game, trying to find what works, what's not working. We saw some of those decisions this week. In particular, you go back to last Sunday against Buffalo, where Jake DeBrusk found himself benched in the early going in that game, only to come back and score a couple of goals, which obviously is, as Bruce Cassidy said after the game, is that's the reaction he was hoping for. We see, you know, on Tuesday, Danton Heinen finds himself scratched in that game. You know, these are the things that, you know, at the midway point of the season, as we talk about trying to get this team going and trying to find more of that depth scoring, you know, those are statement kind of decisions for Bruce Cassidy. How do you feel like he's done in handling this team through this difficult stretch as we've been talking about, and, you know, and trying to get the most out of his guys as we go through, you know, the dog days of the NHL season?
Well, for Jake DeBrusk, listen, the Bruins need some more production out of him. He's got 11 goals at this point. He obviously had the two the other night against the Buffalo Sabres. There's clearly there's more in there. He had 27 last year. Could have easily had some more if he's able on the man advantage to be able to perfect that role out in front with that power play unit to be able to generate some more chances. You did get a reaction from him. You know, as far as Danton Heinen, I thought he played a solid game against the Columbus Blue Jackets coming back into the lineup. The head coach had mentioned that he felt like his puck management had really taken a serious downturn in that last game, and that's what really prompted the benching from the head coach. You know, he realizes that he's playing on his offside But he has to be more mindful of the plays that he can and cannot make coming out of his own zone and how he manages the puck on his half of the ice. But I think he did get a response. But I think if you look at lines 2, 3, and 4, the Corrali line has started to pick it up here a little bit, generating some offense, starting to shift the ice when the Bruins need it and be difficult for the opponent's top line to play against. But it's still lines 2 and 3 that have to get sorted out.
I will add to that, though, the last game, it's kind of a makeshift line, right, with Heinen, Bjork, and Lindholm. They were pretty good. I mean, they generated they didn't score. They didn't get on the score sheet, but they generated chances. So they were around it a little bit in that game. Not, you know, not for 60 minutes, but they were around it and were able to and that's, you know, that's maybe message sent to Heinen, but it's also, you know, I know Bjork didn't sit out, but that could be a little message to him as well. You need a little bit more there too. So, you know, because we've seen good and we've seen, you know, eh. So, you know, you need a little bit more production. You're trying to, there's positions there. There's spots open. And who's going to grab them? And that's right now, I think, their biggest dilemma. Who's, is it going to come from the roster? Is it going to come from Providence? Or is it going to come from outside the organization?
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, one of the points that I wanted to ask you about is, does that get noticed in the room? You know, when one of those guys, you know, who, you know, gets sat down, whether it's in game or for an entire game, do the other guys on those lines below the first line all take notice? Do they all sit up a little straighter and say, okay, well, you know, if I'm not going, I could be next?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. That's part of the message. And, you know, it's up to the player to be able to respond and respond for more than one game or more than one period. You've got to respond on a more consistent basis. It's, you know, that's the whole thing, right? I mean, you're always striving for the consistency throughout a season, and you know that it's in there. You got to try to coax it out of them a little bit more. And if they slip and if they're dipping, you've got to try to find ways to push the right buttons. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But when they do get back in there, are you back in there for good, or are you back in there and then back out of the lineup a couple games later?
The other thing that head coach Bruce Cassidy's talked about is comfort and not necessarily feeling comfortable that your name is going to be in the lineup in the same spot, playing the same role on a night-in, night-out basis. I'm obviously not talking about the well-established players that are playing on the top line or a guy like David Krejci or Zdeno Chara. But for some of those younger players that are still trying to get a foothold and maybe have only a toehold at this point in the National Hockey League, that's the understanding that you have to be able to bring it. And maybe now at this point of the season, Ryan, since we've hit the dog days, it's official. The dog days of the National Hockey League season are here. This is when you need some of your young players, some of your role players to start to push.
617-779-0985. We open up with Maria in Watertown this morning. Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, everyone. Happy New Year to all of you. I hope 2020 is kind to each and every one of us. I know what the standings tell me, but my sense of frustration with this team seems to be started growing in December and is continuing into 2020. And my question to you gentlemen is, you know, how long do you wait as a team, as a coach, as an organization for particular players to get going? It seems to me that we've been waiting for the same groups of players to have that light bulb that clicks to get them going. And I don't have any faith at this juncture that that's going to happen for guys like Heinen and DeBrusk and Brett Richies. And, you know, even Charlie Coyle has started to cool down a little bit. And to me, you know, it's time to take the Band-Aid off and come to a solution, whether it's within this organization or outside of this organization, to solidify this team to make another deep playoff run, because I'm not really sure that I have faith right now that this is the group that's going to get us there. Thanks for the time, guys.
All right, appreciate the call. I mean, is it, are we, look, we're still almost a couple of months away from the trade deadline. Obviously, we've talked a lot about the need to make an addition or to find somebody to fill in that second line right wing spot. But, you know, are we approaching the time that even with an 8-point lead in the division, they might benefit from a little bit of a shakeup in the room?
Well, you never make a move just to make a move, Ryan.
Yep.
You know, the other thing is, that I think every general manager around the National Hockey League, if they have a chance to make a move to improve their team ahead of the trade deadline, they want to try and do it ASAP. And we just haven't seen that many moves to this point. I think that we're going to see a lot more activity after the NHL bye takes place and the Bruins get back in action in late January. That's when I see that you'll start to see things that pick up. You know, Adam Jones the other night asked us a question, you know, is the trade market going to start to loosen up because of some of the moves that Montreal, Calgary, and Buffalo made here in the last 48 hours? And I don't know if those are trigger points, because Calgary was carrying extra forwards that they wanted to jettison. Michael Frolik was on the way out for a long time. Marco Scandella was sitting out of the lineup. They were carrying 8D. They needed a move in Buffalo. You know, and for Marc Bergevin, obviously, at some point, I'm sure we're going to talk about Ilya Kovalchuk. Here's a guy who just lost Brendan Gallagher. He's out with a concussion. He's missing some key forwards. He's out of the playoff picture at this point, and it is a no-risk move for him to sign Kovalchuk to a one-year, two-way deal to bring him to Montreal. And he also adds a guy in Scandella who, if they're not in the playoff picture, and I don't think that they're going to be in the playoffs here in the Eastern Conference, that he can jettison again at the trade deadline. He got him at a very low price, in my estimation, as a fourth-round pick. But overall, I'm sure that GMs around the league, they see the needs that their team has, want to make those trades, but you just can't make them ASAP. It just doesn't happen.
All right, let's go to Dan in Newburyport up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning, Dan.
Hey, good morning, guys. I called last week about a Dan Heinen train. I really like that Par Lindholm line, by the way. But, Judd, you mentioned this is the type of trade that you'd see them make in the off season. But I'm just struggling to understand, and I don't know the cap situation that much. I've tried to do the research. But given their cap situation, don't they need to trade off their active roster to make this feasible? Because the player they need at the deadline isn't likely to be less than $4 million a year, so they need to clear that space. And how can they do that without trading off their active roster? They're going to need to give up 4 to 5 young prospects who each make less than $1 million to add up to that $4 million, and that obviously just doesn't make sense for them in the long term. Don Sweeney isn't going to do that. So if we were to make this real, let's say it's Tyler Toffoli, who's that player they go out and get. I think he makes like 4 or 5 or something like that. How could they realistically clear that money and also give up a package that Don Sweeney would be willing to pay?
Yeah, there's some different. They could be a little creative with that. I mean, they could send some guys down to the American Hockey League. There's a couple guys that would be eligible. There's a couple guys you could send down. And what happens is when that money goes down there, even if they're on a one way, if it's, you know, $1 million of it is saved off the cap. Approximately, give or take a little bit, but I think it's $1 million that goes off the cap if a player goes down to the American Hockey League, to, you know, whatever his salary is. They can get a little creative. They can get a little creative. They can get a team that takes half the money. You can, you know, you can try to get creative to some of these teams who are going to be, and I'm not saying it's easy. It's certainly not easy, but some of these teams that are going to be making trades towards the deadline, who are out of a playoff spot, are also going to need to get to a salary cap floor. So that's an option as well as you move forward. So a team, just for example, let's just say, I don't know where LA is in their salary cap structure, but you mentioned Toffoli, so you bring him up. Mm-hmm. And depending on where LA is, they might have to, if they trade a couple of guys at the deadline, they may have to get to the salary cap floor. So there's some money you can send their way. So, you know, there's a lot of things you can do. LA is one of the lowest teams in the league in terms of salary right now. So New Jersey's a good example. If they start to make some trades, they just traded Taylor Hall. They ate half of his salary in order to make one of the reasons to make that deal. So that's a possibility. There's creative ways to do it. Like I said, not easy, not easy. And that's where the work behind the scenes comes in.
Yeah. And that, obviously the one that, you know, most people will point to is, can they maybe eat some of the Backus contract and move him somewhere, you know, something like that? Because that could open up a significant amount of cap space if they needed it to make whatever other deal that they wanted to make.
Let me go back to the bigger question, sure, though. You know, one of the things that he had talked about, and he didn't reference a specific player about a deal being made in the offseason. Typically, when you see massive moves, guys involving core pieces and multiple players moving off different rosters. Typically, you don't see that in season for a team that has Stanley Cup playoff aspirations. The teams, for the most part, that you're going to see make moves down the stretch, you know, when you start to see like the Washington Capitals making moves or the Colorado Avalanche making moves, they're not going to trade off of their roster to get the pieces that they need in order to win a Stanley Cup because they don't want to upset the chemistry they have already established in the room.
All right, Judd and Bob over at the Garden this morning. Ty Anderson will join me here in the Town Fair Tire Studios as well. Coming up next, after Tim McCone gives us Sports Hub headlines, it is the Sports Hub Hockey Show, taking you up until 11 o'clock.
Shoots and rounds, flashed up the glove, take it away.
It's the Hockey Show.
Centered fire, they score!
On 98.5, the Sports Hub, and streaming on the Sports Hub app.
Sports Hub Hockey Show. We got Judd Surratt and Bob Beers over at TD Garden this morning with Bruins and Edmonton playing an afternoon affair. Here in the Town Fair Tire Studios, Ty Anderson of 98.5thesportshub.com is joining us on what's kind of a busy day for you, I would imagine.
A little bit.
You pulling the double duty today?
Yeah.
Nice.
And I don't think I'm going to get home until like 3 a.m.
Ah, sleep is for losers.
I'm just going to sleep the entire Sunday away, and then I'm going to have no sense of time. So I'm actually excited for that.
You are making me feel a whole lot better during the break here about what we opened the show talking about today, about some of the Bruins' issues with holding leads and all that. You had some numbers that are not great trends.
No. So over the last five games, they have been outshot in the third period 62-29. And there are two games that really sort of skew that heavily, but they haven't looked good in the third period. It seems like it's been a survival kind of third period each and every night with this team when they hold the lead. In these last two games, they don't hold it. And they lose an overtime or a shootout, and that's troubling. That's leaving points on the table. You know, these are teams that Columbus works really hard, and I think so does Jersey, but to lose the way you did, these kind of games, they can't happen. And I think it speaks to sort of the depth issues right now, the chemistry issues that they've had, having to lean heavily on certain guys. So that's been a problem. And I thought about this because Cassie talked about it after Thursday's loss. Do you know their point percentage when leading after two and where it ranks in the NHL?
It's not good.
26th in the NHL. They're surrounded by teams like Detroit and Montreal, Minnesota, New Jersey. Not a good group to be associated with in 2020. Those are not teams you want to be near. So they have issues right now protecting leads or just holding games down. This is not like them. This is typically a team that we've seen them win third periods. If it's a close game or within striking distance, they come out firing, they put it away. That's sort of been what makes them a great team under Bruce Cassidy. So a little bit of a funk here, but I do think some of their issues that we've talked about this year on this show are starting to creep into play.
All right, so let's open it up to the group here. Why are they having, because like you said, that's not a typical Bruins problem. Usually over the years, they've been locked down with the lead. Why are we seeing this year creep up and cost this team, which is one of the best records in the league? You can't discount that, but why are we seeing that cost them points this year?
Well, Judd illustrated where they are now in scoring. Earlier in the year, they were high. They were ranked, in the top five at one point, I believe, in scoring, and now they're down to 10th, and that's started to creep in here recently. So they haven't been able to extend leads. And then at the other end of the ice, it's there's mistakes made here and there. There's a puck that goes in. You hope that they can come up with a save. I mean, I think the goaltenders have been outstanding this year. I mean, the numbers bear that out. But there's a game here and a game there, which you expect. But since you're not able to extend leads, those games or those goals show up even more. So there's a defensive breakdown, or there's a defensive breakdown up the ice that leads to a rush coming back the other way. There's a turnover, the offensive blue line, that leads to a rush going the other way. That New Jersey game, you want to talk about illustrating the way that they played. It wasn't just the third period. It was the second period. They gave up a bunch of odd man rushes in the second because they weren't managing the puck properly, and they talked about it. I mean, I'm not saying anything that they didn't talk about in game and after the game that needed to be a lot better. So, like, So their inability to maybe really bury teams, which was a hallmark for them over the last few, especially last year. I thought last year they were really able to extend leads and just take away the other team's will. And this year that's not, especially recently, that's not happening.
I also think that, you know, part of that is because the Bruins have not had a four-line rotation for the bulk of this season. And the teams that have an opportunity, I think, to win a Stanley Cup overall, they're able to get three, hopefully four lines involved on a night-in, night-out basis. So you continue to come at groups in waves, that you don't just sit back, that you're able to chip pucks deep, create a lot of zone time. But I want to go back to some of the numbers that Ty had talked about. So the Bruins are 14-0-5 when they take a lead into the third period. The Blues, 16-0-4, similar numbers. The Tampa Bay Lightning, who I think most of us believe are going to be in the playoffs and are still one of the top teams in the league, 15-0-4. So very analogous numbers. And as far as the shot totals against, for teams that are behind, they're typically going to outshoot you in the third period. But the question is, how many grade A chances are you giving up? Certainly in New Jersey, the Bruins were giving up those opportunities. But the other day here against the Columbus Blue Jackets, I don't know that the Bruins gave up a ton. They gave up a fluky goal out in front. They did get beat down low in their own zone on a board battle, inability to get the puck out when they had a couple of opportunities. But I think that you have to look a little bit deeper into the numbers before we get a little bit more worried about what's going on.
I will say this, too, and the numbers that kind of jump out at me, they're special teams and where they are right now, and their ranks are, you know, in the top three in both of them, right? And they've scored a power play goal in 9 straight games. They haven't allowed a shorthanded goal in, is it 7 or 8 games? So all these numbers, I mean, their special teams are fantastic here recently. It's just, I think, the inability to extend leads, and then, you know, you let teams hang around, and all of a sudden there's that one goal, there's that other goal, and now you're back on your heels. And, you know, it seemed to happen. It seemed to have crept into this team's game here recently.
So, and that's sort of what I worry about, right, is that they're a great special teams team, but they need to be a good 5-on-5 team. I think we'd all agree, right?
Their numbers 5-on-5 are pretty good, Ty, when you look at the whole season.
They're second best in the league, 5-on-5.
Well, that's sort of the alarming trends, right, is that if you don't have that, now you become too reliant on these things that we're talking about, which have been great. But it's sort of, can that last you, you know, can you find the solution right now within the slump, do you think, with this roster?
I mean, you had numbers at the top of you know, at 9:30 that illustrate, okay, some struggles in the third period, but there's also really good numbers with this team. So I just think that over a long season, are there holes? There's holes. Are there guys that need to step up? Yes. There's players that need to be better. But at the same time, it's a team that is, what, number 2 or number 3 in the NHL right now in terms of points. Call them loser points if you want. They count. And that's how teams make the playoffs sometimes. And I don't think that's going to be the reason the Bruins make it. But you're going to go through valleys, and you got to get through it. And now for the Bruins, it's up to them to figure out a way. I mean, some of the you know, the numbers on 5-on-5, the numbers in power play, penalty killing, they're all fantastic. But you see, and we're talking here about glass half empty stuff, and it's, I mean, I'm with you, there's holes, it needs to be fixed, but you at some point, it's, you can't go overboard as well.
Yeah. Hold on, Ryan.
I just want to contrast that to the team that the Bruins are facing today here in the Edmonton Oilers. Okay. So Edmonton, very similar on special teams. Number 1 in the power play, 4th in the PK. 5-on-5, they are 29th among the 31 teams in the National Hockey League. So they have some serious issues playing 5-on-5 and beyond the top guys. And a lot of their top guys are minus players.
Leon Draisaitl is a minus 20.
Yeah. I think, you know, from my perspective, as we just passed the halfway point in the season, and because it's, you know, kind of fresh, and look, different team, different situation, but we saw Tampa Bay last year kind of get a huge lead early in the division, never look back, and kind of cruise through the season, and then they got to the postseason, they got dumped immediately. You know, that's where I start to, now that we're past the halfway point in the season, and we kind of see that, you know, the Bruins, they're not playing, you know, grade A hockey, but they're compiling these points. They have this lead. I'm starting to kind of feel like, well, they started so strong. If they just kind of cruise through the rest of the season, are they going to be ready to flip the switch when playoffs come up if Toronto can't catch up and make it a run for the division title along the way. Like, that's where I start to worry that, you know, these problems keep creeping in, but they keep getting points. Is there going to be urgency to fix it?
Yes, there is. It's management knows it. Coaching staff knows it.
The team knows it.
The team knows it. So, yes, they're not, you know, they're not blind to it. They realize it, and they know that as currently constituted, especially if you, you know, if you've got some of the holes like they have, they're going to be in trouble when the playoffs start. So they know that it has to get fixed one way or another.
And I don't know if I draw a parallel between the Bruins this year and the Tampa Bay Lightning last year. That was a Tampa Bay Lightning team that, what did they have, 60-plus wins? They tied a National Hockey League record for victories.
They had no injuries, virtually no injuries until Victor Hedman at the end of the year. They rolled on you know, they were number one scoring team in the NHL.
Yeah, they had no adversity. And then when they first confronted it in the playoffs, they folded.
All right, we got Ty here in studio. We were also talking just before we started this segment about the way that this team is put together, and you were talking about the reliance on the top line, on the top defensive pair, how much these guys are playing. So as we're looking at them trying to extend leads or hold leads late in games, that enters into it as well, because we're seeing some of these guys that are really getting pushed as far as ice time goes, maybe even over and above what Bruce Cassidy would like to see out of these guys, because these are his options, essentially.
Yeah, I don't like how much Z has been playing lately. I understand why you have to do it, but that's where trouble enters play.
But hold on a second, Ty. If you have leads in games, and the Bruins have had leads, he's going to play.
Of course, but that speaks to sort of what I'm talking about with this. What do you have behind him, right? You don't want to play John Moore 25 minutes. You don't want to play Torrey Krug just came back. Matt Grizzlick, he's good in his role, but you don't want to put him out there for too many minutes. But it's just, I think that can be an issue in March and April if you can't get him some breathers here and can't extend leads and allow yourself to play some of those depth pieces more than Chara.
He just took a day off. Some day off, right?
Yeah, he had to have surgery, but you know, he got a few days of hospital rest, I guess.
Like, they put a bad screw in there again or something. Give him another one in March. You never know. But that's sort of, with that said, I like Carlo playing these minutes because I think you're really seeing the best out of Brandon Carlo right now. He has some nastiness to him. He's just being a more, I think, take charge defender. You're seeing that finally. So that's great. It's just with Chara, I really worry because he's going to be 43 and he's such an important part of this team. You want to make sure he's not on fumes when these games really matter for this team.
Listen, I agree with you. You want to make sure that every player on your group is at their best once the playoffs begin. But I think that the D as a whole, as you look at the D core, I think they've been pretty good. All three pairs, you know, when Connor Clifton was healthy and Matt Grizzlick was in there and those guys were a pair, they were giving you some reliable minutes. Carlo, as you illustrated, Charlie McAvoy's game before he got nicked up against Washington, his game was certainly on the upswing. And he's another guy that can eat those big minutes. The one thing that Don Sweeney had mentioned to us when he talked during the first intermission was just how much of an element that they realize Kevin Miller can bring to your team on a night-in, night-out basis. What the forecast is for Miller going forward, I don't think that anybody's really clear on that. But to me, as we look at the trade deadline and guys that you want to add, and we can talk about, okay, do you add somebody on the right side to play with David Krejci? Do you maybe add a center and then move Charlie Coyle up to play with David Krejci? I would love to see if the Bruins could somehow address that spot and get a guy of Kevin Miller's ilk. You're not going to be able to replace a guy like that, and certainly what he means to the fabric of the room. But a presence like that on your back end, somewhere in the mix of your D pairs, I think could go a long way.
And I'll tie to go back to your point about the D as well and talking about Char and some of the minutes. But, you know, it was important for them to get John Moore back up to speed, especially if you're going to be without Clifton for any period of time, which, you know, he's not skating yet as far as I know. So, you know, Grizzlick is forced to move over to the right side and play some minutes over there. Probably not the ideal situation. I think he's better suited for the left, and he can play some of those minutes. So you spread the minutes out. That's my point there over on that left side. And, you know, watching John Moore, I think he's getting more and more comfortable. It was important to get him reps. I kept talking to us, get him some reps. Because when he first got back in the lineup, you know, he struggled a little bit. He struggled to find his game. But now, you know, I really think that, you know, he's not going to be the answer. Okay, I don't think that that's, I'm not saying that's the case, but I do think that he can play and fill in some of those minutes, some of those harder minutes, you know, watching him kill penalties. He's good at getting pucks out of the zone. He's good at getting in the lanes. He can move. He's got some quickness there. So, you know, he can, now that he's getting more and more comfortable, I think he gets a little bit more of those minutes as you move forward.
And part of the reason the Bruins have killed off 21 of their last 21 power play situations against, John Moore has played in the last 11 games.
He may or may not be in the lineup if Clifton comes back in and you want to move Grizzly back over the left. But right now it's important to get him those reps.
Just kind of going back to, you know, talking about the defense as a whole, by the way, you know, Krug and McAvoy go down in that Washington game. They miss some time over the course of the last four games. I mean, take away the point that, or the goal that New Jersey gets for the shootout, when you've given up no goals to Buffalo, two goals to Buffalo, two goals to New Jersey, and then two goals if you count the overtime game winner against Columbus. I mean, that's a pretty good run. It's, we're not talking about necessarily the iron of the league in those four games there, but a shorthanded defensive core, these guys still do the job. And we've talked a lot over the years about the depth that this organization has defensively, and that's a really good sign that, you know, two of your top four defenders are out of the lineup for a good chunk of that stretch that I just mentioned, and you're not giving up goals on a regular basis.
That's a team. It's a team, yeah, concept, though, there too, Ryan.
Sure.
I mean, that's, you know, I always kind of go after that. That it's, give the D credit, give the goalies credit. Certainly, I mean, Yaro Alak was one of the main reasons, maybe the main reason, that New Jersey only got the two goals before the shootout. He was excellent in that game, and the Bruins were sloppy throughout. So it goes, you know, you need a good forecheck. You need a good neutral zone. You need good structure in the D zone. It goes all over the ice when you don't have the puck.
And so the Bruins are first in goals against heading into today's game. Without question, the goaltending has been the bedrock. And, yes, the forwards have come back as five-man units to help out defensively. But other than the New Jersey game, because that was sort of an aberration, how many games have you said, even if the Bruins are dropping some of these games in the extra session, can you say, wow, they're allowing a lot of odd man chances where they really haven't managed the puck well? You have to make good decisions at the offensive end. They haven't cheated to be able to generate offensive opportunities, and because of that, they haven't given up as many goals against.
All right, Ty Anderson, he will be covering the Bruins game this afternoon and covering the Patriots game. How are you feeling about the Patriots game tonight, by the way?
A little nervous, but I think I'm all right.
All right.
I think they'll be okay. Next week, is if they make it there, that's what scares me.
All right, then you get to sleep in tomorrow, so enjoy that.
Maybe. There'll be a trade or something. They're gonna do everything tomorrow. I don't know.
All right, thanks for coming in, as always. We got another hour coming up here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Judd Surratt, Bob Beers continue with us from over at the Garden. Billy Jaffe's going to join us in the final half hour today as well. And we get to your phone calls coming up next, 617-779-0985.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 88.5, the Sports Hub.
Hi, I'm James White. On the field, I score touchdowns. Off the field, I'm all about catching a great car buying experience at Acton Toyota. From free vehicle delivery to personalized service, get the experience the Acton Toyota promised for yourself. I did. Details at actontoyota.com.
St. Archer Gold, a low-carb, low-calorie beer, is now available. St. Archer Gold is light, crisp, and a flavorful beer with only 95 calories and 2.6 grams of carbs. Founded by a group of surfers, skaters, and snowboarders in search of a beer that aligns with their interests and pursuits, St. Archer believes that a good beer is the one that fits into your active lifestyle, not one that you have to earn by being active. St. Archer Gold is for those that believe life isn't about a destination, but rather the journey. St. Archer Gold is the ultimate light beer. Celebrate responsibly.
This hour of the Hockey Show is brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Visit Valvoline Instant Oil Change for your 15-minute drive-through oil change. You never have to leave your car, and no appointment is ever needed. Get your 15% off coupon at getanoilchange.com.
Hey, it's Fred Tutcher. You might be feeling the pressure of getting hitched and you want to get that perfect ring. Well, there's no pressure when you go see my friends at the Diamond Guild. They have the largest selection of loose diamonds at wholesale prices and over 1,000 engagement rings to choose from. If you don't see exactly what you love, they'll custom design your dream ring at a better value than stock engagement rings anywhere else. Visit them today at Legacy Place in Dedham or online at thediamondguild.com. The Diamond Guild, where New England gets engaged. Tell Freddie T sent you.
Three-time world champion Stephen Gostowski on treating his hair loss with Leonard Hair Transplant Associates.
Yeah, when I saw Dr. Lepresti, I mean, he was just really easy to talk to and, you know, a straight shooter and said, yeah, you're definitely showing some signs and, you know, I'd love to work with you if I could. And he wasn't pushing anything on me. And, you know, it's one of those things, like, it's up to you. It was just an easy, casual conversation, you know, laid all the options out there for me and tried to urge me in the direction of what would work best for me.
For a free consultation with Stephen Gostowski's hair doctors, Dr. Matthew Lepresti and Dr. Robert Leonard, call 1-800-GET-HAIR.
Hey, this is Torrey Krug of the Boston Bruins. If you love the bees, then you need to check out the Bruins Auto Insurance Program from Plymouth Rock Assurance. It combines awesome Bruins fan benefits like discounted tickets to Bruins games, priority access to TD Garden concerts, and scores you auto insurance from Plymouth Rock, a company you can trust. That's a hat trick you won't want to miss. Go to PlymouthRock.com/GoBruins to find out more about the Bruins Auto Insurance Program. That's PlymouthRock.com/GoBruins.
This is a cow. A cow whose milk became everyone's favorite cheese at the craft fair. But cheese only lasts so long. The impression a small business makes needs to last much longer. And now Vistaprint is introducing free shipping on all business cards in any quantity. Choose from hundreds of fresh designs tailored to your type of company. Or upload your own. The choice is yours. The time is now. For a limited time only, get free shipping on all business cards in any quantity with promo code 4949. That's promo code 4949 at Vistaprint.com. Vistaprint. Own the now.
And now a message from Puffs Plus Lotion Tissues. Coughing and sneezing aren't the season's worst flaw. It's the ordinary tissues that can leave noses raw. With each little wipe, they can leave noses red. So do your sniffer a favor. Buy Puffs Plus Lotion instead. Puffs have lotion to soothe and are soft on your nose. You'll feel the difference with each of your blows. Especially during cold and flu season, a nose in need deserves Puffs indeed.
Tetcher and Rich, mornings.
Say they lose, half the stands are crying. And then if you throw in the Brady angle, 90% of the crowd is crying. Does Brady do a dramatic gesture?
See, I don't think
like
he
raise his helmet?
As he runs off the field, yes.
Like, even if it's a blowout, nobody leaves that game early.
I mean, all I got to say is bring your handkerchiefs because it's going to be a crier.
I'm telling you, if they lose, they're going to show that crowd and there's going to be grown men crying.
Tetcher and Rich, mornings at 6, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
From the Town Fair Tire Studios, Boston's home for sports is WBZ-FM and HD Boston, 98.5, the Sports Hub, Leslie Media Group Station. Sports Hub headlines.
Big day in Boston sports. We start with the Patriots. We're getting ready to host the Titans tonight in the wild card round of the playoffs. Kickoff set for 8:15 at Gillette Stadium. You can hear the game right here on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Pregame coverage begins at 5 o'clock. With Mark Bertrand and Chris Gasper. Celtics, meanwhile, found themselves down 18 points in the first quarter last night, but came storming back to beat the Hawks at the Garden 109-106. Jaylen Brown, team high 24 points. Celtics right back at it tonight when they visit the Bulls. You can catch that game on our sister station, 105.7 WROR. Sean Grandy, Cedric Max will have the call beginning at 7:30. Bruins also in action today as they host the Oilers at the Garden. Judd Sirott, Bob Beers have the call of that game right here on 98.5, the Sports Hub, beginning at 12:30. And in college basketball, Northeastern takes on William & Mary this afternoon. Tip-off is at 4. You can hear that on our HD2 channel or HD2 stream. Sports Hub headlines brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Visit Valvoline Instant Oil Change for your 15-minute drive-through oil change. You never have to leave your car and no appointment is ever needed. Get your 15% off coupon at GetAnOilChange.com. I'm Tim McConan, Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub. Your next update, 30 minutes.
The Pats, the Sox, the Bruins, the Celtics, the Reds, the Sports Hub. The website, 98.5thesportshub.com.
Shoe center, fire,
score! The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
98.5 The Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show as we move into hour number two. Ryan Johnston here in the Town Fair Tire Studios this week over at TD Garden. It's Judd Zerotta and Bob Beers. They'll have the call of the Bruins and Oilers game coming up at 1 o'clock today, 12:30 pregame show. We'll take your calls here in this half hour at 617-779-0985. And in addition to that, as we've mentioned a couple of times during the course of the show so far, the Bruins passed the midway point in their season this week, 42 games in. Today will be number 43. And so I do kind of want to, take a little bit of an overall view of what we've seen out of this team so far and some individuals on this team over the course of the first half of the season. So we'll get to that coming up here in this half hour as well. And then Billy Jaffe will join us to go around a busy week in the NHL. We'll get his thoughts on the Winter Classic as he was down there covering it for NHL Radio and a whole lot more coming up in the last half hour today. 617-779-0985. Let's open up the hour with Mark up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, guys. How's it going?
Good.
I got a few things, guys. First off, I mean, we knew this was going to happen sooner or later. There was no way the Bruins were going to sustain the way they played most of the first half of the season. So, they're going through a one bad dry spell right now, but I'm pretty confident that they'll play their way out of it. But what I want to talk about is the last two games, Yaroslav Halak and Tuukka Rask played their butts off, and they got no help in front of them, okay? And on the overtime goal against Columbus the other night, there was two plays that I just wanted to throw my remote control to the TV. When Pastrnak made that play on the puck, they got caught in the offensive zone. And then Charlie McAvoy paid no attention to the pass. He played shooter all the way, which when you're taught as a kid, let the goalie take the shooter. I would have been on my stomach trying to just take the passing lane away because that guy would have had a bad angle shot. Your thoughts on that, guys?
All right. Appreciate the call, Mark. From your perspective, I mean, Bob, you already mentioned, there were some things definitely about that overtime the other night that that you didn't like. This is a totally different thing, right? I mean, playing 3-on-3 versus playing 5-on-5, it's like watching a totally different game. How do you feel like the Bruins approach overtimes, as a group, whether it be personnel, whether it be how they manage the puck and whatnot? What have you thought about them overall and in particular that game on Thursday?
Well, it is all about managing the puck, right? Yeah. I mean, it's now you see teams, the more they get used to it, it's been several years now, obviously, but you see teams now, they're not afraid to bring the puck back out into the neutral zone. And the reason for it is, okay, we don't have anything in the offensive zone. There's nothing really going on. I'm being pressured out high. I'm just going to bring the puck back in the neutral zone. Now, let's see if we can get the other team, because it's a long change, to make a change. They've been out there for a little while. Let's see if we can get them off the ice, and all of a sudden we get a break going the other way. It's about keeping possession of the puck and then kind of waiting for your opportunity. You're moving. Everybody's in motion. Nobody's standing still. You want to maybe run a couple of little picks if you can, legal picks, obviously. But you're holding on to the puck. It's usually one defenseman and two forwards, and you're trying to make plays off of that. Now, the Bruins had a good scoring chance, right? I mean, you had a little give and go there, or at least Krejci trying to move that puck to Pastrnak going back door. And it was a good look. Pastrnak misses. Okay, now Columbus has possession of the puck. Now what do you do? Well, you've already been out there for a little while. Okay, so his option there, Pastrnak, is either to back off and play D, Or back off and go off. And now you get a fresh body on the ice with Seth Jones coming up the ice. And now, Columbus has been out there for a while, so they may look to kind of slow things down and get fresh bodies out. But as soon as you dart up like that, and I know he's a higher-risk player. We get that. And you kind of live with some of that sometimes. But he darts up, and Seth Jones just turns it on. Oh, he's gone. So that's a mistake. It's a mistake without the puck. I mean, he does so many good things, but you live with some of the other stuff once in a while, and that was certainly one where, okay, you have to make a better decision there. Now they're coming up the ice, and yeah, McAvoy could have been a much better play on that puck. That's, I think, anyhow. I mean, As soon as Seth Jones got McAvoy to move his stick, now Seth Jones is a righty. He's coming down the left-wing side. He's got options. He can improve his angle and try to get a little bit more to the middle to take that shot. He can take the puck to the net. So McAvoy's got to respect that. He really does. You don't want to let a guy just walk straight in there. Yes, you give the goalie the shooter, but you don't want to let him walk straight in. But the one thing you don't want to allow is that pass over to the other side. And you know, guys like Bergeron and Marchand and Pastrnak do it all the time where they kind of drop the shoulder, keep the puck hidden a little bit like you're going to take the shot. You freeze the goalie, and you get the defenseman to move the stick out of the passing lane, and you make the pass in front of him, you know, over to the other side. And that's Jones had a little bit of a fake, and he's coming down his off wing there. But as soon as McAvoy moved his stick out of that passing lane, thinking that Dubois was going to go to the far post and he was going to try to block that pass, the passing lane became open, wide open, for Dubois to get the one-timer. And no, Rask had absolutely no chance on it because he has to respect Jones coming down on the shot.
I mean, you know, just from an overall perspective, you know, like we were talking earlier about the shootout. Bruins have lost, you know, 6 out of 6 in the shootout. They've also lost 5 games in overtime. I mean, it's just the... Is it just a product of the 3-on-3? Because like what you're discussing, you know,
Minded their overtimes, Brian. To be honest with you, they've got 2 wins. One of them was that Torrey Krug one, right, coming right down the middle. Another one was a beautiful passing play between Pastrnak and Krejci. It was against the Rangers, I believe, where Pastrnak made a great move and then Krejci was able to finish it off. You know, their overtimes, by and large, have been okay. They've been fine. You know, they're on a losing end of a couple here recently, but they've been entertaining. They've been back and forth and hasn't been without chances. And but the shootouts, obviously, you know, that's an area that has to be improved. So, but like I told you earlier in the show, like that's a little bit further down for me as far as, but if they're going to keep going to overtime, yeah, you got to find a way to win some of these things.
Let's go to Pete in Westminster. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, morning, boys. How you doing?
Morning, Pete.
So I got a real quick thing first before I mention the overtime thing. Is Charlie Coyle's play lately, since he got the contract extension, has really been lackluster, and he hasn't really been contributing to scoring as much. He's had a couple assists here and there, but I feel like since then, that point, it's kind of like he just kind of dropped off. And maybe moving the lines around and putting him down on the third or fourth line instead of playing as the second with Krejci and DeBrusk. And, I don't know. Move that around a little bit, maybe light a fire under him to get him back up to where he was in the beginning of the season when he was, you know, getting more points on the board. And then the overtime play, it's just really, really, really frustrating because we're leaving points on the board. We got to stop settling. It's almost like they get into overtime and they're okay with getting 1 point. It's like they're settling for the 1 point. Something's got to change with that overtime. I don't know if they're trying to be too fancy on the puck. They're losing battles in the corner. They just look sloppy in overtime, and it's got to change.
All right. I disagree with you there. You know, first of all, all right, yeah. The opportunity before Seth Jones sets up the game winner the other night against Columbus, you did have that chance with Pastrnak and Krejci before the miscue and the puck headed the other way. And then in New Jersey, the game before on New Year's Eve, Matt Grizzlick walks into the left dot and drills one square off the far post and out. Bob had sort of touched on this, that the Bruins, for the most part, have managed the puck pretty well and made some good decisions in overtime. It hasn't always gone their way in the extra session. The shootout is another matter. I actually thought that the Bruins were going to finally turn it around on New Year's Eve. And then Marchand comes down with a chance to win the game, and he cranks one square off the post. He had Blackwood beaten. At some point, those numbers are going to change.
It's a pretty dangerous team they're facing today in overtime, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't care what their numbers say.
I'm going to guess they can roll out a pretty good 3-man unit, no
question. And they're 2-4.
Yeah.
They're 2-4 in the 3-on-3 session.
But see, some of that, again, it's just kind of a product of playing the 3-on-3. As Bob was talking about it, you know, it's all about puck possession and decision-making. You can have, you know, you can have the puck in the offensive zone for 90 seconds, 2 minutes. You take, you know, one bad pass or one shot that misses the net, all of a sudden you got a 2-on-1 going up the other end. And it can be just that simple. And we've seen some games end that way this year.
I'm curious what they do today if they do go to overtime. You know, if you face Dreisaitl and McDavid, if that's the case, do you go with two defensemen? Or you start with two defensemen until you get puck possession? and then you switch one up. That's, I mean, I think it was New Jersey that did that the other day against the Bruins. They started with a couple defensemen, and then when they would switch one up, like a D-zone faceoff or whatever, they, you know, they would make changes on the fly based on who had the puck.
All right, let's go back to the other point that the last caller made before we got back into overtime, which is, you know, he brought up Charlie Coyle and his production. And if you go back and look at, he got that, you know, that contract right around Thanksgiving time. I think there's only been five, maybe six games since then where he's had a point. He's got two goals in that span.
Well, hold on. Let me go back again, you know, Ryan.
Sure,
so
go
if
ahead.
You look at his splits. So he didn't sign the contract at the beginning of the season. In October, he had two goals, three assists.
Mm-hmm.
November, three goals, six assists. December, two goals, four assists. So the numbers, for the most part, are pretty similar.
Okay.
I don't think that there's a correlation. I don't think that we've seen Charlie diminish his work ethic since that contract was signed.
Okay, but there seems, because he's not the only one who's brought it up, and people expect more, right? This is part of what happens, though, when you sign a contract like that, is people are going to expect more. Is there more to Charlie Coyle? Are we going to see more production out of him?
Now, that's a different argument. There's certainly a lot more in there, I think, when it comes to a guy like Charlie Coyle, and the Bruins are working with him on that. When to take the puck to the net, when to shoot the puck, when to distribute to his wingers. He's a guy who can command some space down low in the hash marks, and he has still been able to do that, but that hasn't always translated to goals and an assist. And the hope is, because remember, Charlie's still a pretty young guy, he's only 27, that he can continue to develop as he stays here with the Bruins, with some better players than you saw in Minnesota, play in the same spot, hopefully. That's the other thing that's kind of contributed to what we may have seen with Charlie Coyle, because the coaching staff has told him, we don't want you to have to go back and forth between right wing and center. We'd like to keep you in the same spot. But out of necessity, they've had to make some changes. And in some ways, that does impact the production that you see.
But I think, you know, when the Bruins traded for him last season, that was one of the knocks on him, I think, in Minnesota, is you always felt like this guy should, the numbers should be better. You know, he's got one 20-goal season on his resume. He's got one 50-point season on his resume. But it feels like he should, you know, that should be happening more regularly for him.
Well, and I will say this. Yes, I agree with that. It should be. You kind of expect a little bit more because it's in there. I mean, he's just got all the, you know, he's got a lot of things that you can't teach, right? And now try to incorporate some of the other things into his game. But at the same sentence, look, last year in the playoffs,
awesome.
Nine goals.
Sure.
Right? Nine goals, right? And that line was really effective. And was it because they were playing against lower lines? You know, maybe sometimes, but that was part of the idea. And he was able to produce on that line, and a lot of it was Heinen on one side and Johansson on the other. But that line, especially Johansson and Coyle, as they went forward, I mean, they were really effective in the whole playoff run.
And part of the narrative with Charlie Coyle in Minnesota, since you go back to that production, was that they shuffled him all sorts of different spots. He's playing on the top line. He's playing on the wing. He's playing on the second line. He's playing center. Now he's playing on the right wing and the second line. So they shuffled him around all over the place. And because of that, that had an impact on his production. Charlie Coyle will tell you that if he's in the same spot with the same line mates, he's going to have a better opportunity to be able to score the points that you want. He got that opportunity in the playoffs, and he delivered.
All right, Judd and Bob, continue with us over at TD Garden. We'll get to more of your calls coming up next, 617-779-0985, here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is where Boston talks hockey.
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 The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. Ryan Johnston with you here in the Town Fair Tire Studios on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Judd Zerot and Bob Beers joining us from over at TD Garden. Not that we've talked about this beforehand, guys, but would you join me in my sentiment that while Patrice Bergeron is an all-star every year in my book, that it would be best if the fans not vote for him as they round out the all-star roster this weekend, that maybe it would be best for him to get a few extra days of rest rather than having to travel for the all-star game?
Yes, I'm all for it. I mean, name him an all-star and invent an injury.
Yeah.
You know,
go the Ovechkin route with him if you need
to.
Well,
no, Ovechkin just says he's not going. That's a whole different story. I mean, take the one-game suspension. But since we're on that, and I don't know if there's any backdoor dealings here, but why isn't Brad Marchand on this team?
It's amazing. It's amazing.
No, it's not. It's ridiculous. No, but you're right. I mean, it's like, how is he not on that team?
I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, again, the entire game has become kind of a gimmick and all that. It would seem like he would fit perfectly on a national stage for that, especially
exactly
the season he's
for
having.
For every reason.
Yeah. So I don't know. But, you know, if you're a Bruins fan, probably best to not put your votes in for Patrice. Vote for anyone but Patrice for the All-Star game this year. But good to see, you know, like they're going to be well represented. Obviously, Pasta gets the gets the captaincy for the Atlantic Division, and Tuukka certainly well deserving the year that he's having. Although, I mean, it almost feels like he and Halak ought to share the duties for the Atlantic Division, because the two of them have been so good night in and night out for this team.
Yep. And Bruce Cassidy.
And Bruce Cassidy gets the coaching slot, as we mentioned earlier this year, which is certainly well deserved. Let's go to Steve in Nashua. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hi, guys. Good morning. I just want to step... Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay. I just want to step back a few minutes to that discussion you were having about the Bruins in overtime and the shootout. And basically, the way I look at this is, first of all, I'm not a fan of the overtime. If you like the overtime, go watch the kids play on the pond. That's what it's become. But it is what it is. It's what we're stuck with. Now, 3 points, and then I'll hang up and let you guys address it. But I feel like the Bruins are leaving their players out way too long. They can't get them off. That led to the first mistake, which led to the 2-on-1 the other night. Pasta is absolutely gassed. Can't get back on Jones. And when he stepped up on him in the corner in the offensive zone, that spelled disaster. I pretty much said game's over right here. Number two, when they came down, like Bob was saying, you know, McAvoy, I don't know if hockey's changed so much that I've missed something, but I was always taught in a 2-on-1, the defenseman takes away the path, no matter how that is. And if the shooter beats your goalie, tip your cap, game over, great. But he didn't even make a decision. He stayed in the middle, and then, like you said, he opened up and let the pass. That, to me, has been a theme in overtime. These little, simple, fundamental mistakes that they seem to be making, and it could be because they're on the ice too long, because those guys were absolutely gassed. So I just want to, you know, I see it as a definite theme, and I think that's what needs to change, and that has to come from coaching and doing a little things a few different, in my opinion. Right. I'll hang up and let you guys talk.
All right, Steve. I mean, some of that, we've already addressed, but, you know, I think that's kind of a product of how you approach the 3-on-3 is that sometimes you're going to get caught having to hustle back on defense after your guys have been out there for a long shift because you're focused so much on trying to keep possession of the puck and keep it in the offensive zone.
What time, Judd, you probably have the stat in front of you. What time of the overtime was that goal scored? Because the Bruins had possession of the puck, if I'm not mistaken, right from the drop of the puck.
It's 52
it came
seconds.
52 seconds in.
So, and it was a quick strike. So you've had the puck now for 40-plus seconds in the offensive zone. Just full control of it in that offensive zone. But when there is a turnover in the offensive zone, that's where you have to make the decision to get off. Okay, you've pressed it. You've had it in the offensive zone. You've had your chance. Now all of a sudden the puck gets turned over. If you have an opportunity and you're closest to the bench, you've got to get off. You might not be able to get all three guys off, but you got to get one guy off. So look, and this is one game. You know, it's not the reason maybe why they've lost other overtime games. There's always a different reason, but if it becomes a reoccurring theme, then that's something you have to look at. But it was an issue for them. I think it was last year. Was it last year or the year before? There was an issue for them at the beginning of the year. They kind of straightened it out. It was last year. They straightened it out, and they started, you know, getting better results as the overtimes went on during the season. So, you know, if you're going to play this many overtime games, you make a couple of adjustments here and there. But I'll go back to my original statement. I haven't minded them for the most part in overtime. Last game against Columbus, there were a couple mistakes made, one in the offensive zone, maybe one in the defensive zone, and, you know, the puck's in the back of the net. So some better decisions, yes, but some of the overtimes have been, the Bruins have given themselves good chances to win.
And the other thing you have to keep in mind, so a couple years ago, the league also tweaked the overtime system where the goaltenders changed ends in overtime.
And I like that.
Yeah.
I like it. It leads to more odd man rushes. If you're going to play overtime, I like that aspect of it.
Because they wanted to generate more goals. They wanted more games decided in overtime and not go to the shootout. And if you look, and we talk about this all the time in the second period, that, you know, because you've got the long change, you're going to see some more opportunities as a result because guys are going to get stuck out there and they can't get off. Now, in this case, the Bruins, they had an option to change. It was right in front of them because the offensive zone was right in front of their bench. Columbus got the puck. Jones rocketed up the ice. I think he may have surprised some Bruins with his speed and then fed it across to Dubois, who finished.
Yeah, I'm just going back over a couple of the last losses that the Bruins have had in overtime, I'm saying, not in the shootouts, in overtime. So the previous one prior to this Columbus game was Nashville, and I think that was a Roman Josi goal, and I can't remember it, to be honest with you. I can't remember how he scored that goal. But the game before that was the LA Kings, and that was Kopitar coming down the left-wing side, and the shot was taken, and Kopitar scored. It was a two-on-one. So, you know what I mean? So, you know, there's going to be different reasons why they get a two-on-one, and then it's, you know, can you convert? And the Bruins have had chances on two-on-ones to convert the other way. So I don't remember the Josi goal. Maybe
that
you
was
do,
the
Jeff,
bad bounce. Remember, it hit the referee at the end.
Hit the referee in the corner, okay,
right,
and bounced
right into the slot.
Yeah, or maybe he made the pass.
But
whatever it was. Yeah, Ellis scored. Exactly. It was Ellis. So a bad break. You know, back. So there's different ways. It's not just one specific way, and it's not. And if, like I said, if it becomes a trend, then you have to address it. But they've lost in some different ways here in the OT.
All right, let's go to Mary in Marshfield. Quickly, Mary, we squeeze in one more call.
Yeah, I am definitely going to head that charge to not vote for Bergeron, please. I just feel like he's had his accolades. We know who he is. He needs the rest. He's had injury issues, and I want to see him fresh for the playoffs. I just worry about some of the little bad habits that they've been prone to do the past like few games, not clogging up the neutral zone enough. They're allowing the other team so much ice, and then they get in that box. Even when they're 5-on-5, they kind of back off and give them space. I want to see them attack. And just real quick, what do you think about breaking up that first line for a couple games and see what happens, just to spread out that scoring and allow the other lines to kind of remain more constant, if you will. Thanks, guys.
I appreciate the call, Mary. I mean, this is something that comes up on a fairly regular basis. You know, do you shift Pasternak around and put him on the Krejci line is generally how it goes, and find somebody else to plug in on the Bergeron line. Are we there at this point?
Let's play that out, right? If you do that, okay, then where does everybody else get slotted? Do you move Coyle up to wing on the Bergeron line, or do you move him back to that third-line center role? Then do you move Danton Heinen, where he's had some success up there playing alongside Bergeron and Marchand over on the right side? You know, do you move somebody else up there? Do you move Bjork over to the right side? You don't have you've got... You know, look, it's no secret, right? You've got a couple right shot forwards who sat in the crowd, I mean, last game, and that was Backes and Richie. Mm-hmm. Do they play today? I don't know. We haven't heard the lineup yet. We'll hear that later on this morning. But so you're forced to play some guys, some lefties over on the right side. Danton Heinen is usually the guy that gets moved over there. And then you're trying to mix and match, you know, moving forward with that. So where do you put everybody else if you move Pasternak down? I get it. I understand it, and I get the argument. So do that, and then how do things get slotted out? And that's kind of a hole for them right now of having the right personnel to be.
You can almost guarantee every night is, you know, that Bergeron line. It's as close to a guarantee as you're going to get in the league. Do you want to monkey with that to try and make, you know, the guys further down the lineup a little bit more effective. And that's, you know, that's, they've tended to default to, no, we don't want to break that up. We will be joined by Billy Jaffe over at the Garden this morning as well. We'll talk about some of the, what's going on around the NHL with him as we continue on the Sports Hub Hockey Show after Tim McCone gives the Sports Hub headlines.
Sports Hub headlines.
Patriots getting ready to host the Titans tonight in the wild card round of the playoffs at Gillette Stadium. Kickoff set for 8:15, and you can hear the game right here on 98.5. The Sports Hub pregame coverage begins at 5 o'clock with Mark Bertrand and Chris Gasper, and then Bob Soucy and Scott Zolak have the call of the game. As for Josh McDaniels, SNY reporting that despite the fact McDaniels is set to interview for the Giants head coaching job next week, it is becoming clear that for a number of reasons, it is a long shot McDaniels would actually take that job. Celtics were down 18 in the first quarter last night, but they came storming back to beat the Hawks at the Garden 109-106. Jaylen Brown leading the way for Boston with 24 points. Seas are right back at it tonight when they visit the Bulls. You can hear that game on our sister station, 105.7 WROR. Sean Grandy, Cedric Maxwell have the call beginning at 7:30. Elsewhere in the NBA, reports out the Pistons are escalating discussions with several teams about a trade involving All-Star center Andre Drummond, and the Celtics apparently one of the teams involved in those discussions. Bruins also in action today as they host the Oilers at the Garden. Judd Surratt, Bob Beers have you for that one right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub beginning at 12:30. And then in college basketball, Northeastern takes on William & Mary this afternoon. Tip-off is at 4. You can catch the game on our HD2 channel and HD2 stream. Sports Hub headlines brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Visit Valvoline Instant Oil Change for your 15-minute drive-through oil change. You never have to leave your car, and no appointment is ever needed. Get your 15% off coupon at GetAnOilChange.com. I'm Tim McCone, Boston Sober Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Your next update, 30 minutes.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub in the final half hour of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston here in the Town Fair Tire Studios, just hanging out with Tim McCone on Sports Hub headlines, while over at the Garden is where all the fun and excitement is. Bruins and a 1 o'clock matinee against the Edmonton Oilers. Of course, Judd and Bob will have the call here on the Sports Hub. You can see it over on Nesson, where Billy Jaffe holds court in between periods and before and after every game. And he's, I assume, joining those guys in the booth. What's going on, Billy?
Your assumption is correct. I am here joining, looking at the clean ice right now. We'll see if it's fast ice today.
How was the trip down to Dallas for the Winter Classic?
It was awesome. It was a business trip, but it was awesome.
Of course it was.
Yeah, I thought they put on a good show. Actually, I thought they put on a great show. I thought the colors were magnificent there. The only thing I would complain about, I just didn't get the pant color of the Dallas Stars. Otherwise, I thought their uniforms and the Preds uniforms looked sharp. The stands were packed. I'm telling you, guys, packed with sweaters of both teams. About 20,000 Preds fans made their way down there. They were loud for a while, and then they went silent, and then about 65,000 Stars fans, with the help of some liquid gold, I think, were having a great time, too, as their team went up, and it was fun. It really, you know what? Between just the colors and the party around it, I'd never been to the Cotton Bowl. I don't know if either of you guys have, or RJ, if you guys have been down there. It's not just, I thought it was just a football stadium. It's the state fair that is all around it, and there's all these things around it, and they completely built it up for the Winter Classic, and they made it a fan fest area, and it was the people were having a great time. They really were. They're having a great festive party time.
Not a real sexy matchup for television, no. But it turned out to be a really fun game to watch. There was a little edge to it. The guys were, you know, guys were throwing some big hits, some crossing the line, but overall it was a good product. It was a good game to watch for an outdoor game. It those things can get a little sloppy or a little bogged down, but it seemed like the conditions were good too.
We've had two really good games in a row. I thought last year's Blackhawk Bruin game was excellent to watch and excellent to work. And I thought this year's game was excellent to watch and excellent to work because of the intensity. There, it was. I was just telling Beersy before we came on air, That was as physical a game. I thought last year's game was physical with the Hawks, but nowhere near as physical as this game. The ice wasn't as fast in this game as it was in the Blackhawk-Bruin game last year in South Bend. And because of that, I talked to a couple of players, terms like sticky and a little soft. And then I talked to Matt Duchene after the first period, and I asked him about the physical play. And he said, well, part of the reason is can't handle the puck, and then things are slowed down, and guys are getting hit more. And I'll tell you what, there was some major hits in that game, both literally and figuratively. And, yeah, it was ferocious, and it became a great game. And let's face facts, too. It's also great vibe and look when the home team, with the 65,000 fans in their favor, screaming and cheering in the second and third period when they made their comeback and then they get the victory. It made for an even more intense game.
Fallout from that game, Corey Perry gets a 5-game suspension. That's pretty heavy.
It was, but I actually thought, I was asked yesterday in another interview, or 2 days ago, and I thought he would get, I did, I thought he'd get at least 4. I thought he did. I mean, they came down with 5. It was pretty heavy, but you know what? He might say that he didn't mean to do it, and Rick Bowness, the interim head coach of Dallas, said Corey Perry wouldn't do that. Take Corey Perry out of it in particular. I thought he meant it. I thought it was a sneaky. It was so sneaky that I think 95% of the people, A, in the building or in the at the stadium, and B, watching, nobody saw what happened. It was that sneaky. And he got enough of the wing out, the right arm out, where Ellis was in a very vulnerable position, having just released the puck maybe a half a second to a second earlier, that I you know what? I mean, there is no place in the game for
Has
that.
Has there ever been a player that says, yeah, I meant to do that?
No.
I mean, of course he's going to say that. I mean, it's just he got him, and it was bad. It was. I know that the blindside part isn't in the wording anymore, you know. But
right.
It was. I mean, Ellis had no vision of him coming. He was opening up for the shot, and he caught him from that blindside, if you will. And he caught a lot of the head.
A ton of the head.
Yeah. I mean, that head really snapped. It was
vicious.
He's been suspended a couple times.
Two other times, yeah. And I don't have the incidents in front of me, so forgive me for not knowing. But the fact is, it was the game was intense. I know it was early on in the game, but he caught him square in the head. B, there was a little elevation of the elbow. And see, people sometimes think, well, he didn't elevate the elbows that much. Doesn't matter. These guys are so good. It's where the contact is.
It's the main point of contact. You can have your shoulder, but if you make the main point of contact the guy's head, that's a headshot.
And if you intentionally turn it into him, even if you make it look like it was, but he intentionally had the arm up just enough. To me, there was more than enough there to warrant that. And the funny thing, I saw George Parros the night before, and I was just about to say to him, hey, it's been a little bit quiet lately. And then
two suspensions. McDermott got
suspension. And then McDermott got two-gamer yesterday. Yep. Yeah.
So we mentioned the conditions in Dallas last week. I would imagine, you know, mid-50s probably not going to happen next year at the Winter Classic now that they've announced that it's going to be a Target Field up in Minnesota. That's going to be awfully chilly on January 1.
Who plays them?
They haven't named it yet.
I know, yeah. But I mean, I'm saying
what I'm hearing is there's a few options. My two, if I had money to bet on it, would be St. Louis or Colorado. One of those two teams. I think they keep it. I think they understand the divisional rival aspect of it. Winnipeg is not, if it happens, it goes against everything that NBC would want for that game. With no disrespect to Winnipeg, the facts are the facts. It is not an American city last time I checked, and it loses a market rate for the for NBC network, and NBC's the network that produces the game. I do not see that happening. I don't. And I know that this one was not well watched. I believe this was the second lowest outdoor game watched at 1.9 million on the early results, but it still had a great feel to it, a great vibe. I'm sorry, I just don't. I don't see Winnipeg being it. I don't see Chicago. I don't. I mean, unless Chicago says they want to do it because they're just not good right now, and it's not nearly as appealing. I see it being
was
Colorado it or St. Louis.
Wasn't Minnesota Chicago a few years ago
in the stadium series?
Yeah. Yeah. They played at
the stadium series. Okay.
Yeah. Played at the University of Minnesota,
right? Okay. Which I think, by the way, I don't know if you guys agree or not. I've done enough of these now. I think I've done 5 or 6 Winter Classics. I just don't. I know, like at Fenway, I know it. I think visually it looks better, and it is better for the fans in a football stadium than it is in a baseball stadium. It's very all over the place in a baseball stadium, I think. The last two, between Notre Dame football stadium and the Cotton Bowl, I think have both looked spectacular.
Yeah, I love the one at Fenway, though.
I love the one at Wrigley. Yeah. I did that one, too, and it's nostalgic, and it's great. I think for the fan experience, though, you have more fan, you have more people that can see more in a football bowl.
That might be. I thought the game looked good at Busch Stadium in St. Louis. I thought the game looked good at Nationals Park in Washington, D.C. But I think if you're going to aim for baseball, go to an iconic stadium. Target Field is a terrific place, but it's brand new.
It's Target. Yes, I know. But it's same thing. Hey, same thing a few years ago in Washington. What's it called? Anyways, Nationals Park.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's just a sign of where the park is. It's newer. It's all that. There's no history there. It felt to me generic. It felt to me to be a very generic experience.
Billy Jaffe is joining us. Let's talk about some of the other things happening around the league. It came up a little bit earlier on the show, but Ilya Kovalchuk is the newest member of the Montreal Canadiens. This is a guy that we talked about a few weeks ago, you know, as a possibility of a guy that the Bruins might look at, you know, on the open market, could be had for cheap. Montreal certainly got him for cheap, $700,000 on a two-way deal.
Yeah.
What do you think of the deal, and is he going to do anything up there?
I think he'll have a few games where he'll have some impact. I mean, this is a pretty desperate type of deal for him to sign, a two-way deal. I mean, it goes to show you that there wasn't any other interest in him. And I've said the same exact thing on this show. I've known Ilya for a long time. I think he's handled this so wonderfully. I'm a fan of his as a person and formerly as a player. I just don't see the foot speed. I don't see the interior play to be significant enough to make a long-term impact. This Montreal Canadian team is devastated by injuries, whether it's a Gallagher, a Joel Armia, a Drouin. They're devastated by injuries. And Marc Bergevin even said it. I mean, he thinks that this is Kovalchuk's last gasp at, you know, this is his last kick at it, and I get it, and I don't blame Montreal for going for him at all. Will he do anything? He's going to need a centerman or two to do something for him. I don't know if they have that. So on the one hand, maybe he would have done a little something more here with the Bruins, but I think when all said and done, I don't see his impact being that significant.
And that's going to be the big challenge. I think who's going to be able to get him the puck, because Philip Danault plays in a two-way role and a lot of checking assignments for Claude Julien. Max Domi has kind of shifted back and forth between center and wing. He has just started to pick it up now. Nick Suzuki is a rookie here in the National Hockey League. So that's going to be a big test for Kovalchuk, because he may have to create on his own.
Good luck.
I got to ask you about John Tortorella's week. He rightfully called out the league for not fixing the clock. If you didn't see it, Chicago ends up beating Columbus in a shootout, but it should never have gotten that far. There was a clock issue that didn't get corrected. He went off on it after the game, got himself a $20,000 fine, but then they also added on like a year's worth of probation. So they've already announced he's got a $25,000 fine the next time he speaks out in a similar matter, if he does it over the course of the next year. I don't remember the league ever doing something like that.
Because they haven't.
Yeah.
At least publicly. We don't know when it comes to coaches, some of the things that go on behind the curtain of the NHL. This was a statement they felt they had to make. I do believe this, that if John Tortorella had apologized publicly, that he would have avoided this. But that is not John Tortorella's nature. And this is something that he absolutely firmly believed in. Hard to argue with him, too. It is.
Well, that's the other part of it, Billy, is that, look, it's one thing to fine a guy, because you don't want coaches, you know, going off on the league and their officials. I understand that. But he was also right. And I wonder, does the NHL take that into account, and will they do better the next time?
Well, I think they hope, right, fellas, that they do better the next time with regard to the incident. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, there is a conduct clause for people associated with the NHL. They know that they're opening themselves up to potential fine and suspension, and or sometimes both, if they if they mess with the shield, so to speak. You know what I mean? If they put themselves in a position that, or they put the league in a position they feel that they have to defend themselves, or just in an unfriendly position.
Were there fines last year in the playoffs when, now, the NHL, after last year's playoffs, made several rule changes based on what happened in the playoffs. There was a major penalty called that I think we all agree that should not have been called. There was a lot of comments after that game. Now they've got a new rule this year saying if there's a major penalty call, they can review it to see if it was actually a major. So that was put in because of that mistake, right? There was a hand pass that was missed that led to a win.
San Jose,
right? So now a coach can challenge that. Mm-hmm. There was a puck in the netting when the Bruins Columbus that now the coaches can challenge that. So they put these rules in because of mistakes made. But my ask was, there were a lot of comments made after that San Jose Vegas game. Were there fines then?
Not because that I know of. But that doesn't
I know it's a playoff game, but still.
Well, right. Jonathan Marchessault just tore into the officials.
I'm asking about the coaches, though.
Yeah.
That was, by the way, the same referee who worked that game. Dan O'Halloran worked that Vegas-San Jose game, also was working the Columbus Blackhawks game.
Yeah, and he's retiring this year. He's done. And that, you know, look, Danny has been one of the best officials around. Where what Judd's talking about is the clock, the game of the Columbus Blackhawks, Columbus and Blackhawks series.
Oh, wait, they asked the timekeeper.
I know.
That's what the league said.
I know, but it's amazing. I don't know why they didn't fix it. I don't know. I don't know that. No, the only thing is I can say about this, I don't think that there were fines in those aforementioned scenarios, Bob.
Yeah.
But the league doesn't always have to announce if there's a fine against the coach, from what I'm told. But I think they would have in the playoffs to make a statement. So I don't think there were. I don't think that there were. But this, I think they felt, I know some.
So is there going to be another rule change?
I don't think there needs to be. I think it needs to be. I think what they need to say is this is how it's implemented and implemented better.
All right. Well, the other thing that drives, I think, a lot of head coaches crazy around the National Hockey League is for the coaches, based on the wins and losses, they are held accountable. You don't often see it with the officials. It's not transparent. And I think that there are a lot of coaches around the National Hockey League that wished there was more transparency involving some of the officials and some of the referees.
And in the NFL.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, you're absolutely right. I know. I you're 100% right about that.
All right, real quick before we wrap up, Billy, give us a quick summary of what to expect from the Edmonton Oilers today.
Top-heavy team, phenomenal special teams, power play penalty kill. Although the penalty kill has struggled lately, they're still one of the top, I think it's three, at home on the road. They do not have the depth of a Bruins team. Their goaltending lately has been inconsistent. We're expected to see the big Koskinen in net today, not Mike Smith. What they are having an issue with right now is they're giving up more high-danger chances from the areas of the slot, etc. They haven't been getting that extra save. This is a team that, look, if they get pond hockey and if they get flowing, they can be really good, because that's what they're built around right now. But the depth, if you look at it, they don't have a puck-moving defenseman like the Bees do. They don't have the potential third and fourth line combinations that the Bees do. With that said, if you give them power play opportunities and you let McDavid and Draisaitl flow, they can be very good.
All right, thanks, Billy, and thanks, Judd, Bob. We will be listening in 90 minutes. You guys will be back on. Go grab a quick breather, and we'll be tuned in.
Sounds good.
All right, that'll do it for this week's edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Gasper and Murray take you for the next 90 minutes right up to Bruins pregame, and I'm sure they will be pretty much 100% on Patriots and Titans coming up tonight here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. I am back with you tomorrow for post-Patriots coverage from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. with Marshall Hook. We'll talk to you then. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.